Well, here in Zechariah 11, I think we've got Zechariah living out an acted parable. He is asked to, verse 7, feed the flock of slaughter, especially the oppressed of the flock. I get the impression that he is, well, he's shepherding the flock that is going to generally go to slaughter, but the idea is that he's trying to save at least some of them. Now, he gives up. He breaks his shepherd's rods, his shepherd's staves, and eventually it seems the whole flock are given over to calamity. But my point is, these two staves in verse 7, I took for myself two staves, the one I called grace and the other I called union, and I fed the flock. There's obviously a connection between these two, that grace is to be the basis for unity. Now, I know that when he breaks the rods, he says that he is therefore breaking the covenant that was made between God and his people. And yet, that covenant was actually all about grace. This was, even the law of Moses, was all of God's saving grace when you read between the lines of it. So then, the connection is that the union between Israel and Judah, which again is broken when he breaks that rod, is connected with the union between God and his people. In other words, the horizontal level of connection between Israel and Judah, between the individuals amongst the people of God on this earth, that is related to the connection that the people have with God through grace, the, if you like, the vertical connection. And this is brought out very clearly in John's letters in the New Testament, that our fellowship with each other is connected to our common fellowship with the Father. We are in fellowship with each other on earth because we are all individually in fellowship with God in heaven by his grace. And that's the utter fallacy of saying that, yeah, well, I accept that Brother so-and-so or that person over there is in fellowship with God, yeah, but not with me, because of denominational politics and so forth. That is a nonsense and is in fact a denial, really, of your own connection with God if you then say that you're not going to extend that on a horizontal level. So the basis for the connection between people on earth, within God's people, the union, as the stave is called, is grace, is the covenant relationship that there is between God and each one of his people, of course, by grace. And he uses these as his staves, as the shepherd's rods. And so the direction for leadership amongst the flock of God has got to be based upon grace. This is the basis, ultimately, for our union with each other. Now, that, of course, is not how many groups have seen things. They have assumed that theology, doctrine, is of paramount importance. And so they produce lists of doctrines, and they say, this is the basis of our faith, this is the basis of our unity. But it is simply so that two people can actually assent to the same statement of faith, and yet they, for whatever reason, are still, even then, not really connected with each other, either because of church politics or because they differ on other things outside of those theological points, or their culture is different, or whatever. In my own community, the community was supposedly bound together by a document called the Birmingham Amended Statement of Faith, but then it simply is not the case that that document bound together the community, because all sorts of people were not in fellowship with each other, even though they shared the same doctrinal positions. It is simply not so in practice that sharing a common theology unites you. It is not the basis of unity in practice. What is the basis of interpersonal unity is a common experience of God's grace. And fellowship and unity with each other is in that sense an experience, and it is not an on-paper theoretical position. If God intended unity between his people to be predicated upon a specific set of theologies or doctrinal points, he would have given us the document. He would have guided us as to what exactly is so critically important, which issues must unite us together. And we don't have that, and that's why everybody disagrees that, oh, well, this is important, that is less important, that is not really important, and things like that. Well, all that is you know, unfortunately where things have gone wrong. But here you see that the direction for a community, the staves in the hands of the shepherd, are grace and union. Because the wonder of grace, that I, as an unworthy sinner, should receive this wonderful grace of God, this is what should make me humble. This is what should make me reasonable and open to other people and seeking to save them. And in a word, love, it comes from love. Love and grace are inevitably connected. If you see the awesome wonder of his grace to you personally, well, it cannot be that you do not live in love towards other people. And so when one is broken, so is the other. When grace, the covenant connection between God and his people, was broken, so was their union, so was their fellowship, their unity. Now, that is what happened here at this point, and we can take the lesson that, you know, grace has got to be paramount, and appreciating it has got to be paramount, because that is going to be the basis for all else. Now, in verse 10, I took my staff grace and cut it apart, that I might break my covenant that I had made with all the people. Well, how then did God break his covenant? Because he has said a number of times, for example, in Judges 2, I will never break my covenant with you. Well, why then does he break it? I think the point is that they had broken it all the way through the prophets. Continually, it is being pointed out to them that you have broken the covenant. And the curses for breaking the covenant that are listed in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, those curses have come upon you. So they have broken the covenant. And so when we read that God breaks his covenant, symbolized by Zechariah breaking the staff that's called grace, that symbolized the covenant, this was not so much God withdrawing his love, God withdrawing his grace, or breaking his covenant on his initiative. He was finally and sadly accepting that they had broken it. And they had not taken up the new covenant that was offered to them, to the exiles, by Jeremiah and Ezekiel. They had not accepted that, for the most part. And so God is simply, sadly confirming what they themselves had done. So there does come a point when relationship with God is absolutely broken. Now, we cannot, I suppose, define in terms of individuals whether this one or that one has got to such a point or not. But it is a fact that salvation is not automatic. And we should, however, not fear that God is going to ever withdraw his grace or his love. This is not what he does. But human beings can choose to refuse his love. They can choose to refuse his covenant relationship and to break it. And that is what happened here. It's rather like when we read of being adopted sons in the New Testament. The point has been made that under Roman law, you could disown your natural son, but you could never disown an adopted son. So the power of the language that we are the adopted sons of God is very powerful. But, of course, an adopted child, just like a naturally born child, could, of course, disown their connection with the parents. And we can do that. But God on his side is not going to do that. And so the idea is that living in that covenant of grace should inevitably lead to unity between brethren. This is the power by which we can overcome that natural, parochial, divisive, elitist element that there is within us, that we are naturally tempted, tend towards division. And yet, when God's grace comes into the equation and we really grasp it for ourselves personally, then we find the strength to not be like that and to come to the unity which is the unity of the Spirit.